Hello and welcome to the Android Central podcast. My name is Daniel Bader. This week on the show, there is an epic showdown against Google. You probably have heard a little bit about this if you've been paying attention. Epic is suing Apple and Google because it's went around the traditional in-app purchase mechanisms in both the iOS App Store and the Google Play Store. And as a result, both Apple and Google kicked Epic, well, Fortnite specifically, but on the Apple side, kicking Epic off of the App Store and macOS App Store as well. Big deal. Lots of implications there. We'll be focusing mainly on the Google stuff because there's a lot of other reporting on the Apple side of things, but we wanted to dig in a little bit to what happened between Epic and Google and why, even though there are third-party app stores on the Play Store, on Android rather, Google is still kind of in hot water here. And then we will talk a little bit about the Note 20 Ultra, that review dropped this week, and finish off with some BlackBerry news, question mark. Ooh. This has been sort of a weird week for tech news. So joining me to talk about it is Jerry Hildenbrand. What's going on?
Not much. How you doing?
Oh, man. We had some technical difficulties earlier with the guest that we wanted to have on, Stephen Warwick of iMore. He's been reporting this. So I'll plug his stuff right at the end. But unfortunately, the smartest man in the room around this whole fracas, this brouhaha, is not going to be available. We'll have him on another time to talk about it. But we do have another very smart man to talk about it. Hayato Huseman, what's going on?
Morning. I would love to hear the word brouhaha in your lexicon more often.
Oh, yeah? It's a good one? You like
it's good.
I like synonyms for like disaster or just general disorder. There's a lot of them. They're
what was
great.
Your other word? Fracas? That's a good one, too.
I think it's fracas. Fracas. Mm.
I'll look it up before I include it in my next article.
It must be of French origin. I'm guessing. Yeah, it's Italian, then French. A noisy disturbance or quarrel.
Oh, same.
It's a good word. Yeah. No, I get it. That's life at the moment. It's just a. I'm just gonna swear. It's a shit show.
There right we now. Go.
Everything's aww. Going wrong. Sorry, kids. So we'll start with this because as we were recording our podcast last week with Dan Rubino, we were talking about the Surface Duo. We ended the show with what's happening with the TikTok acquisition. Microsoft is pursuing TikTok's US, Canada, Australia, and New Zealand operations. Then they pivoted and said, no, we want the whole thing. But as that was happening, Epic Games had been kind of going through some subterfuge. Earlier in the day, they launched direct payments in Fortnite for Android and iOS. It was a server-side change, so there were no app updates to speak of, but all of a sudden you could pay less money for V-Bucks inside the game if you didn't want to go through Apple and Google's own in-app purchase mechanism. And then Apple said, nope, that's not allowed, and kicked the Fortnite app off of the App Store. A few hours later, Google did the same thing. Then a very well-coordinated media rollout of an amazing video parroting Apple's 1984 Macintosh ad, the most famous ad ever. Epic did the same thing. They kind of made a shot-for-shot recreation of it, basically calling out Apple for its own monopolistic practices. And then launched a lawsuit and did the same for Google a few hours later when Google kicked Fortnite off the Play Store. Now, Google's lawsuit, Jerry, is a little... the Epic's lawsuit against Google is a little different. But it does claim that Google uses the Play Store to suppress competition, in particular because it makes sideloading super, super scary. And it also prevents companies like LG and OnePlus, which were called out in particular inside the lawsuit, from making side deals with companies like Epic in order to prevent third-party app stores from behaving like first-party stores. So, you know, in particular, we have situations where you know, there's the Play Store pre-installed on a Samsung phone and also the Galaxy Store. And app updates can happen in the background silently. But for a company like OnePlus trying to install or pre-install the Epic Game Store, those silent updates are not possible because Google thinks that they are a security risk. That's one element of a very, very long, very detailed lawsuit. So walk us through what your thoughts are about this Google lawsuit in particular.
First off, this is... I don't know. It's Epic is really just trying to troll its way to a win. A lot of what it's saying takes a little bit of the truth and then stretching it out, making it worse. I mean, they claim it takes, you know, dozens of clicks to sideload an app when it really only takes one. They talk about how apps are unable to send updates out silently, but Facebook does it on every phone that's not a Pixel. It's just they're stretching the truth a bit. I don't like that because it takes away from the an actual real issue that is 30% too much. I mean, I think 30% is a bit much. I have to come out and say that Google takes too much money from developers. And we're losing sight of that simple fact because Epic is being Epic and spending millions of dollars to make videos and stuff.
Right. But it's also not nearly as big a company. And this has really been the sticking point for some people, right? It's like two massive companies are battling it out and users are stuck in the middle.
Right.
They can't install Fortnite. But when you look at the scale of Epic, which is, you know, I think a $17 billion company, not a small organization at all. Tim Sweeney is a very wealthy man. He can fund this by himself if he wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
But compared to Apple and Google, Epic is a relatively small company by degrees.
Right, and they're playing that up a lot.
They are. I don't know. No doubt about that. I mean, there's absolutely no question that Epic is taking advantage of big tech's size, but there is also the argument that this company, Epic, is perfectly suited to try to tackle big tech from a law perspective, from a judicial perspective, trying to force the courts to take up the call that these companies are too big and engage in anti-competitive practices.
I just don't like the way it's being done. Epic was fine with the agreements with Google and Apple that it had made until it got enough users where it could, you know, cause trouble. And that's what happened. They knew, okay, we'll do it, and eventually we'll get millions and millions of users on mobile like we have on, consoles and PC. And once we have all those users, we'll, you know, have leverage to fight Apple and Google. And all those users are being, you know, they're like pawns being used as a bargaining chip. And I just don't like that at all.
So there's this argument that Fortnite is available on Android, even if it's not on the Play Store, because Samsung has a stub to the Epic Game Store on its Samsung Store or Galaxy Store. A lot of people use Samsung phones. Therefore, it's pretty easy to get Fortnite installed. It's just a couple of extra clicks. If you really want it, you can go to Epic's website and just download the Epic Game Store APK, which is basically what happened for over a year before Epic relented and put Fortnite on the Play Store. But at the time that Epic put Fortnite on the Play Store, it made a point of sort of bringing to the fore the fact that it could not create or sustain a business if it was only available as a sideload. So it had always been available on the iOS App Store because there is no way to coordinate third-party app stores. There's nowhere else to put the Fortnite app on an iPhone or an iPad. But On Android, Epic tried this. It had an exclusivity deal with Samsung for 3 months. Then it rolled it out to everybody that could play Fortnite and realized about a year later that it just wasn't sustainable. The growth was not what they wanted. And if they wanted to build a business around Fortnite for Android, the way that, say, Tencent had been doing for PUBG Mobile and later on Activision for Call of Duty Mobile, it needed to be on the Play Store and it needed to accept that 30% in-app purchase fee that came with anything that goes through a Google Play Store game. Now, Google says that there's no limit to what third-party app stores can do, but they have to abide by certain guidelines, and there are, as Epic says, scary pop-ups that prevent people from going that route. And as a result, Epic relented and put Fortnite on the Play Store. Now, this happened, everything was sort of fine for a while until this direct billing controversy where Epic says, okay, we're going to wake up one morning and we're going to make it possible for you just to bill us directly inside the app and save 20% permanently, knowing full well that this would contravene the Play Store's guidelines. Google, after it removed Fortnite from the Play Store, said, quote, "For game developers who choose to use the Play Store, we have consistent policies that are fair to developers and keep the store safe for users. While Fortnite remains available on Android, we can no longer make it available on Play because it violates our policies. However, we welcome the opportunity to continue our discussions with Epic and bring Fortnite back to Google Play." What do you think about that?
I think that was a very smart way to handle a bad situation, especially compared to the way Epic has done it. I hold no will against Epic as a company. I want to say that up front. It sounds like I'm bitter. I'm not. Epic knew what was going to happen, and the reason that the Epic Game Store is no longer in Google Play is because they wanted this to happen. And that just rubs me very wrong. Google is Google. They're going to do what they can get away with until they're forced to change, but at least they're diplomatic about it. Epic could have been a little more so.
Epic wanted this. They don't want any there's no financial gain in the lawsuit. There's no they don't want ultimately to get paid for the lost revenue,
right,
of Fortnite but not being on the app or Play Store. The goal here is to get the courts to take up the notion that Apple and Google and their app stores in particular are anti-competitive and they suppress competition in their own way. Now, you wrote an article last weekend about how, you know, Google sort of tacitly accepts third-party app stores on Android, but over the years has clamped down from a security perspective, making it harder. Maybe harder is not the right word, but it stricter to install third-party apps. You know, there's Play Protect that scans everything that is mm-hmm. downloaded from the Play Store. There's a scanner on Android that will kind of take a first pass at anything that is downloaded outside of the Play Store for malware. Google has the right to kind of jump in and delete apps from your phone if they are deemed to be malicious or expose vulnerabilities. They've done that a handful of times, and they disclose it in their annual security report, which is great. But Google sort of tolerates these third-party app stores and does set limits on them. And I wonder if you could walk us through what your assertion is from that article, whether Google does like the fact that Android is open enough to support third-party app stores, or if it's just a part of that legacy of AOSP that Google would rather not be there anymore.
Yeah, it's a legacy that I think Google's current management would love to do away with all of them. On the developer side, you know, Google's developer pages come right out and say that, you know, we encourage it and they actually will help you you know, write an app for a third-party app store. But on the management side, I mean, they see that as a way to eat into their revenue. Unfortunately, that's how Android started, and if they would do away with sideloading today, there would be too much uproar, too much of a fracas that they couldn't deal with it.
A fiasco.
Yes.
Well, it's interesting because this third-party app store ecosystem is sort of what's keeping Huawei alive during this entity list, issue. They have obviously the app gallery, but they launched something called Petal Search, which is a search engine that identifies APKs uploaded to websites that they deem to be secure enough to let you download and sideload.
Yeah, which is a good feature.
It's a good feature, but these are websites like APK Pure, APK Mirror, right? These are companies that, you know, we know the guys who run APK Mirror. It's the Android police people. They're great. But it's still, not only is the selection limited, right? Some companies issue takedown requests and don't allow their apps uploaded to these third-party depositories. But they're also, you know, potentially not as safe as the Play Store. And, you know, Huawei kind of leans into this a little bit. And I'm wondering, you know, if a company like Samsung does a little bit of work getting exclusive apps onto the Galaxy Store. LG sort of has a store still, but it's mainly just for its first party apps. And like, they want you to pay $10 for a font because that's a thing. You know, I wonder why Google wouldn't allow OnePlus to pre-install the Epic Games Store on OnePlus phones and allow that to be updated in the background, even if OnePlus could guarantee that, you know, it could sort of like be the guarantor for that mechanism, right?
Right, and my understanding is that's up to OnePlus, that OnePlus can still become quote-unquote Google certified and have their own store, and they could literally say that Epic is our trusted application market. And I can't wait to, you know, maybe if this goes to court, to hear a little bit more about, you know, the claims that LG and OnePlus were blocked from including the Epic Games Store. So that makes no sense to me.
Well, what's interesting is that it's companies like LG and OnePlus are allowed to have first-party app stores that upload in the background and kind of bypass the Play Store, as Epic puts it. But OnePlus is not allowed to make a deal with Epic to maintain the Epic Game Store on OnePlus phones.
I couldn't find anywhere in any of the public documentation that differentiates between a first-party store sponsored by OnePlus and another store that would be trusted by OnePlus. Maybe it's in private documentation, but I couldn't find anywhere that that's specified.
Yeah, and our friend of the site, an XDA developers editor-in-chief, Michel Rahman, he actually looked through the GMS documents and couldn't find anything either, as far as I know. Yep. But it's kind of implicit in the lawsuit, because Section 16, it says, Epic struck a deal with OnePlus to make Epic Games available on its phones through an Epic Games app. The Epic Games app would have allowed users to seamlessly install and update Epic Games, including Fortnite, without obstacles imposed by Google's Android OS. But Google forced OnePlus to renege on the deal, citing Google's, quote, particular concern about Epic having the ability to install and update mobile games while, quote, bypassing the Google Play Store. So there's clearly this negotiation, right? Google steps in. It kind of takes a back seat when it wants to, and then steps in when it feels it necessary.
When
companies are overstepping their bounds according to the GMS rules, even if it appears those rules are unwritten.
We recently found out OnePlus made the very same type of deal with Facebook and Instagram, and apparently Google was okay with that.
But Instagram and, or Facebook is not considered an app store, right? It's a network. It's like a distribution network between its own apps. So Facebook wouldn't allow the Epic, you know, if Facebook owned a third-party app store and allowed other companies to upload their, you know, their services to it, I think that would be considered an app store. I think the distinction here is that the Epic Games app on Android only allows you to download Epic branded products, but it probably crosses the line because it's not just one kind of app, right? It's anything that Epic has a relationship with, they're potentially allowed to distribute. So Fortnite is a game, but Epic says that it also distributes House Party, the basically it's what, like a gaming, social gaming app,
yeah,
on Android. And that would be a different kind of app, a different, fall into a different category. And my guess is that the Epic Games app would have liked, if possible, to expand its distribution on Android to include maybe apps from other developers and start competing with the Play Store directly.
Maybe that's exactly what they did on PC. They, you know, have the Epic Games Store, and it's has other developers, you know, games in it. So that's a possibility, and maybe Google was looking towards the future and decided they wanted to stop that before it could happen. I don't know. Like I said, I can't wait to learn a little bit more about this if this ever ends up in a courtroom.
It will. Well, at least the Apple side of it will end up in a courtroom.
Yes, definitely.
It was picked up a couple of days ago, and the Apple fracas is worse because Apple has basically said, by if you don't fix your App Store violation by August 28th, we are going to essentially disconnect Epic Games' relationship from all Apple-branded products and app stores, which means the Unreal Engine would no longer be available to developers. All Epic content would be removed from every single facet of Apple's app ecosystem. That would be disastrous because a lot of people do Unreal Engine development, and it's unclear how that impacts games that are currently using the Unreal Engine on the iOS and Mac OS app stores, because will they be allowed to update if developers don't have access to those tools anymore? It's unclear.
If they remove, you know, the association in Xcode where you can't use the Unreal Engine or the SDK, they can update.
Yeah, it's very, very interesting. I'm gonna be holding on for what happens here, and I'm very, very curious how this will escalate. I know it's gonna go to 11 with Apple because Apple will stand its ground. I'm very curious to see how Google is going to approach this. If Google will try to get a deal outside of court and try to fix this, because Google is in a very different position. They have slightly more leverage here to negotiate with Epic, given the fact that that Fortnite is available outside of the Play Store already. And my guess is that Google may want to win here. They may want to just say, we're going to strike a deal and figure out how to solve this outside of the courtroom, with the caveat that that may set a precedent for other developers. And if that happens, then Google may have to change their guidelines altogether.
I certainly hope Google changes its guidelines for everybody and not just Epic. I know this is not the same Google of the don't be evil days, but I hope they haven't strayed that far where they would just, you know, give a special deal to Epic to get Fortnite back.
Yeah, for sure. All right, we're going to move on and talk about the completely switch gears and talk about the Galaxy Note 20 Ultra. Hayato, you reviewed this thing. It's massive. It's beautiful. You stayed up all night editing your video.
I did.
What is your 30-second hot take of the Note 20 Ultra?
It's a really, really nice phone. I mean, I usually, after a review is like period is done, I kind of tend to like maybe stick with it for a little bit and then move on to a different phone. And this thing, I don't know that I'm going to do that. The cameras are fantastic with a few caveats. The screen is incredible. It is a lot bigger than I normally like on a phone, but I've kind of just learned to deal with that because every phone is giant these days for the most part. So it's really just a fantastic device all around.
So I highly recommend putting a really bulky case on it for about 6 hours and then taking it off, because that makes the phone feel a lot more manageable. Do that every day or so, and you'll think this is a tiny little phone by the end of by the end of it.
Big OtterBox with a belt clip.
Yeah, the Defender, that thing is the best case ever made for your BlackBerry, which we'll talk about in a minute. So I think the Note 20 Ultra, I looked, as we always do on review embargo day, you publish your review, you do a bit of publicity around it, you talk about your feelings, and then once the dust settles, you go and you read and you watch all of your friends' reviews. And I noticed a trend here. From MKBHD to Dieter at The Verge to David with Android Authority to you to me, Michael Fisher, we all agreed that this fixed the issues with the Galaxy S20 Ultra. It took that one step further. It made it a better looking phone. It made it a more consistent phone. And the improvements to the S Pen, even if you don't use the S Pen all that much, were so massive over the Note 10 that it's probably worth upgrading if you have a Note 8 or Note 9, because the S Pen is just so much more consistent and smoother. Plus, the camera is the best camera, I think, on any Galaxy phone ever, including the S20 Ultra, because it doesn't do that focus hunting, and because Samsung has kind of, I think, toned down some of its processing and made it a little bit more like a Pixel style color, reproduction. And I just wonder what your thoughts are now, having used the camera for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that I would call it necessarily Pixel-like, but it is definitely more subdued than other Samsung phones as far as things like saturation and all of my usual complaints with the Galaxy phone's cameras. I spoke with Samsung a little bit before my review went live, and just they just wanted to see how things were going and see if I had any general questions. And we kind of talked about how they still consider the S20 Ultra to be their ultimate camera experience, the best cameras you're going to get on any phone. And that was kind of, it felt weird to me, because the Note 20 Ultra definitely like has far fewer issues with focusing than the S20 Ultra did. And even though they have the same 108 megapixel main camera, the telephotos are very different. And I much prefer the way it works on the Note 20 Ultra, where you get a shorter sort of maximum zoom range. So the S20 Ultra was able to reach 100x. The Note 20 Ultra gets to 50x, but it has a native 5x telephoto lens. And so that looks, to me, much, much sharper and much nicer than the 4X on the S20 Ultra. And you can sort of watch it as I was doing this just yesterday morning. You can watch as you zoom from like 4.9X, where it's still using the main camera, to the 5X mark, where it switches over. And it's just this massive jump in quality, where the 4.9 is pretty dodgy. And then as soon as you hit 5X, it looks like the main camera all over again. So I've been really impressed with that. I mean, I know a lot of people have their strong opinions and complaints with the huge like camera housing on it.
It is freaking massive. It's stupid big. I found if you hold it the right way, it's basically a built-in pop socket.
Oh yeah.
Because
oh, yeah.
you can rest your index finger underneath it, and it's so wide, it sticks out so far that you can physically hold the phone without having to rest your pinky underneath it.
That's actually what I've been doing. It's been great.
I'm writing an article about that today, because it's something that I've been doing, and it's completely changed not how I use the phone, but how I consume content. Because it means that I can kind of like rest it and nestle it underneath my index finger, and it's just a much more comfortable way to consume if I'm not tapping the screen. It's kind of game changing, and I'm not advocating for more massive camera bumps like this, because it is kind of egregious, but it's kind of a nice side effect, and I'm not really complaining about it on this phone, just because it's so big in every other dimension.
I also think it's worth noting that like for all the criticism and hate that the camera housing has been getting, this phone looks so much better, to me at least, than the S20 Ultra with basically the same camera setup, which I just find the S20 Ultra to be like the most boring, plain-looking phone made in the last 5 years. And the Note 20 is actually really nice-looking, I think.
Yeah, I think a lot of that came down to the color choices Samsung employed on the S20 line. The fact that it's rounded rather than squared off. The fact that, the camera housing on the S20 Ultra just looks like it's basically like a sore on the back of the phone, whereas this one was designed for the phone, right? They lean into the design on it. The three big sensor lens housings just look like they fit on the back. That, I think, was obviously deliberate, plus the matte, like the satin matte finish,
which should be on
especially
every phone.
The Mystic Bronze is sweet. I'm definitely a fan of that.
Yeah, I don't know that I've had this much fun like taking photos and videos of a phone in a long time.
Right. Like taking photos with the phone, taking photos of the phone, it's all good. All right. We're not going to linger too much on that because we got to keep moving. Jerry, yesterday, surprise announcement, some company called Onward Mobility, never heard of them. They came out of stealth. That's their words, not mine. They announced that they have acquired the licensing rights to BlackBerry mobile devices from BlackBerry, which regained them from TCL earlier this year in February, and announced that there will be a 5G BlackBerry phone with a keyboard launched in 2021, made by a subsidiary of Foxconn called FIH. That's the same company that's been building BlackBerry phones for the last 7 years. We don't know anything about this thing, but I am getting calls from Canadian media to talk about the fact that BlackBerry is back, baby. And I want to know what your thoughts are, because this is a company that does not clearly have a huge legacy in smartphone design and distribution. The executive team is made up of ex-Sonim people. So Sonim is the company that makes really heavy-duty phones used by enterprise and logging and people in remote areas, but it's not a super well-known brand outside of those niche markets.
Well, I'm excited and cautious. I want BlackBerry to be back. I think any regular listener or reader knows that I just really like BlackBerry. Mostly because of the form factor. I love a phone with a physical keyboard and, not a slide out thing or anything, just a keyboard on the front. I thought the Key 2 held so much potential, and I don't know where the breakdown was between BlackBerry and TCL, but it withered on the vine to the point where I no longer use it or could recommend it, before they stopped supporting it at all. And maybe this time will be better, but on the other hand, I'm tempered and know that probably won't.
What's interesting is that we don't know the whole story, obviously, but we believe the reason that the relationship broke down between TCL and BlackBerry was that there was an understanding that BlackBerry, the company, would maintain its Android software on behalf of TCL. And with the company pivoting to sort of MDM, enterprise software, they were not really interested in extending that contract. Now, it's not clear whether Onward Mobility itself is going to take up the maintenance of the Android OS, the security patches, the stuff that's baked in to BlackBerry's version of Android that makes it so secure, or whether it's just going to adopt, say, Android One and hope that people will just be happy enough with that. We have no idea. But taking on software maintenance in addition to building a hardware, building a phone and distributing it for a tiny company with very little capitalization sounds like a disaster.
Yeah, I'm actually speaking with the company next week, and I'll see what I can find out about that, because that's very important. That's what's going to make or break this. The market for a phone with a physical keyboard isn't going to be huge, but you can't risk alienating, you know, all the users that want your device by not keeping the software in shape.
We'll see. I know you're cautiously optimistic. I'm more realistic about it. I don't think that this is going to work, but you know, God bless them for trying. That's really how I feel about it. All right, we're going to move on and wrap things up with a quick What's Making Us Happy. This is our segment where we go around and we talk about what is one thing that's making us happy this week. Doesn't have to be anything to do with tech. Hayato, I'm going to put you on the spot. What is making you happy this week?
Well, one of my favorite bands, Sleep Token, just put out a not really a new album. It's sort of an addition to, or I guess they call it a deluxe version of their most recent album that came out sometime last year, I think. It's got a few new songs on it that are like one of them is just a piano rendition of another song already on the album. And a few of them are covers done in their own styling. And that's I've really been enjoying that that album as a whole. And that's kind of like one of the only things I've been playing nonstop lately. So that's definitely brought me a lot of enjoyment as of late.
What's the band called?
Sleep Token. The album is called Sundowning.
All right. Give it a listen. Jerry, what's making you happy this week?
BlackBerry might be coming back.
That's no wrong answer.
No, I mean, that's, I really, really want this to succeed, and I really want to love whatever they bring to market. And thinking about, you know, I might be able to have a BlackBerry again that I like using makes me happy.
Yeah, I guess.
I pretend that the other part isn't going to happen, where it's going to stink. I'll pretend like that it's not an option.
All right. What's making me happy this week is a podcast. In particular, it's an episode of a podcast. It's from the amazing folks at Radiolab. It's the last episode is called The Wooby Effect, and it is a fascinating deep dive by a producer called Simon Adler, who goes through the history of the Chinese language and how back in the 80s or the 70s, when they were trying to computerize the country, they physically could not put the Chinese language, which has thousands and thousands of unique characters, onto computers because they had such little memory. And they had to develop a version of essentially the Chinese alphabet that was compatible with the QWERTY keyboard system. And it's just a fascinating episode. Eventually, the Chinese government launched what many Chinese people right now use, which is Pinyin, which is sort of an audio form of Mandarin, but that still uses the QWERTY keyboard. I'm not doing it justice. It is one of the best episodes of a podcast I've heard in years. I was literally walking my dog in the rain, not even paying attention to the downpour, because it was such a fascinating episode, and I just wanted to get to the end. Give it a listen. It's on the Radiolab feed right now. All right, that is a very abridged Android Central podcast this week. We are all very busy. We will be back next week with a much longer and more in-depth episode, but I don't know. What do you think? 40 minutes? I think we could do these every once in a while. It's like a little baby episode.
Yeah.
Jerry, you are at GB Hill. Hayato, you are at Hayato Huseman. I am at Journey Dan. We are all at Android Central. And have a great week, folks. We will talk to you very, very soon. Bye-bye.
See ya.
Adios.